Hello, and welcome to the Find Your Best Voice podcast. I'm Craig Price. On today's episode, we talk with singer Carrie Lee Pearson. Carrie speaks about forging a path in contemporary classical music, why she thinks that it can be an important vehicle to elevate female voices, and her initiative, iPlay, which is designed to bring contemporary classical music to young audiences. Let's jump into the conversation. Well, Carrie Lee, welcome to the podcast. I'm so excited to have you here. And I know you have a great perspective that's going to be different than some of our other guests. And I'm excited for you to share that with our listeners. So can you tell me, as we get started, like, how did you first get started with singing? And do you have some kind of an earliest memory of you and singing?
Well, I think like a lot of singers, I just remember being the loudest one in the choir as a little kid. And I'll never forget when I was in kindergarten, I was always involved. I grew up Catholic and I was always involved in our churchy stuff. And they had all of the little kids like saying a line from one of the Bible gospels about Christmas. And everybody, they're like, get closer to the microphone, speak up. And then I go up to the microphone and I start talking, and like, back up from the microphone, just be a little quieter. So I mean, I sang all the time when I was a kid. I would be singing by myself. I was a lot younger than my siblings, and I think I filled the empty space, almost like an only child, with myself singing all the time. My dad and I used to play this game when I was really little where we would sing everything to the, I forget the tune. It was the, I can do anything, you can do that tune.
Oh, yeah, Annie, get your gun. Yeah.
We would go back and forth singing that all the time rather than talking. So just a lot of stuff like that. I didn't take singing seriously, though, until I went to college, pretty much. I started taking lessons, like legit lessons, halfway through my sophomore year of high school, and I really wanted to be a marching band director. I wanted to be a marching band director in a high school, and I didn't feel competent enough on the flute to get into the program, but I was like, I can sing, I'll go sing instead, and then here we are.
Great. But I bet the flute made you like a better musician early on when I always tell students who are younger that are studying voice, like learn an instrument too, if they don't, or when they come to me and they play an instrument already, it's like exciting for me because I know they'll have a strong kind of background that they're kind of building on.
Yeah. I think I always try to explain it to vocal students and to parents of who want their kids to learn voice, that voice is so abstract. There's no physicality to it that you can see. And a lot of the physicality you can barely feel.
Right.
You really have to try. So I just think that an instrument, almost any instrument, does give some more concreteness to the ideas that you see on the page, especially.
Yeah, absolutely. So is there someone early on that kind of inspired you or encouraged you? I know you mentioned kind of singing along just around the house with your dad, but is there an influence that led you to pursue singing?
An influence. I don't know. That's actually a really hard question. You know, it's not really a person, but when I was in high school, I was involved in drama and band, and that's kind of where I learned that I really liked singing, but I didn't like the action of acting as much. And so that's where I really found, I guess it's the involvement of my teachers and then going into college, where I really found that the thing that I was passionate about was the music.
Yeah. That's amazing. So is there a moment that you understood that like, oh, I have a special talent for singing and this is something I should do?
I don't know. That's another funny question. You know, I learned how to read music kind of backwards. I learned how to play flute and piccolo by ear. And so I didn't know how to read music very well. And then what I started doing was applying what I heard to what I saw until I was able to read the music on its own without listening to it at the same time. So I think it was just the fact that I was able to connect with music in that way that I was like, you know what? I really like this and I want to keep doing it.
That's really interesting that you learned kind of that way and developed your ear early on. That's probably really helpful. It's kind of like Suzuki without being Suzuki.
Yeah, right.
So how did you decide that you wanted to study singing? I guess you mentioned you kind of had a choice there with like the flute and singing, and you thought maybe singing was your path. And how did you decide you wanted to make that part of your education?
You know, this isn't a great answer, but it's just the passion kind of grew as I started singing more. You know, I was in the practice, I got to that point where I just wanted to stay in the practice room. I wanted to just keep working on music. I found myself just so hungry to keep finding repertoire and working on new things all the time. And so it was really just that passion of wanting to keep discovering music that I think really drove me to want a career in singing.
Yeah, that drive is so important. So where did you study?
I started at the University of Central Florida in Orlando, and I studied there with Dr. Jeremy Hunt and Dr. David Bruner. He's the choir conductor at the time. And then I met you, actually, pretty soon after at the University of South Carolina, where I got my master's. I studied with Rachel Calloway, who was a fantastic mezzo, who also does contemporary singing like I do. And now I'm at Bowling Green State University getting my doctorate, where I study with Dr. Jane Rogers and also this composition teacher that runs the DMA program, Dr. Marilyn Shrewd.
Great. Yeah. So you're kind of segueing into my next question. You're pursuing your DMA, and it's a degree that's focused specifically in new music. Can you tell us how new music became an important part of your life? And about this program a little bit and why it kind of was the fit for you.
Yeah. So there's kind of two reasons why I've really started liking contemporary music, contemporary classical music, I should specify. One of them goes back to what I said earlier. It was this drive to want to just keep discovering music. And it's just so exciting and interesting to see what people are currently doing with music for me. I really like delving into that. So that was one part of it. I remember the first contemporary classical piece I was just obsessed with was John Cage's aria. And I remember it's probably the first thing that'll come up when you Google it, watching this YouTube video of the score while the person's singing it. I was just like, that's so interesting, because you can tell the singer is in control of what they're doing, but also they're just singing like squiggly lines. And so that was the first thing. Also, Alvin Lucier's I'm Sitting in a Room was very interesting to me.
Yeah.
Me too. That's not vocal in the sense of like a trained singer, but it is vocal. Definitely.
And for me, it just kind of shifts the way I think about sound and music. It's just such an interesting concept and idea and kind of manifestation of that idea, I guess.
Yeah, no, it definitely, there's so many things I love about it. One of my favorite things about it is I love like the idea that contemporary music can cross boundaries and introduce ideas in like a very easy way. And in that piece, he has a stutter, and the stutter gets repeated over and over and over again. And it just becomes this really beautiful human thing.
Yeah.
But then the other reason why, right, the question was, why did I go into contemporary voice, right?
Sure. And choose that program. Yeah.
The other reason why I got into contemporary voice a few years ago was I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my voice, and I knew I wasn't super interested in opera. Mm-hmm. And then so I kind of got shoehorned, because I did it very like acceptingly. But I started getting more interested in chamber repertoire, and that just tends to lean more into contemporary music.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But I chose Bowling Green State University because they have the DMA in contemporary music, and the faculty here are lovely. They really are. Yeah, I mean, that's the short answer of why I'm here.
Sure. So can I, maybe I, hopefully you can answer this for me. I don't know. I know there are, I know of a lot of schools that have really great contemporary music programs, but is this the only school that currently has a DMA that is a degree in contemporary classical music?
Yeah, there are two schools that offer doctorates. One is Bowling Green, offers a DMA, and the other is San Diego, UCSD, offers a PhD.
Great.
That's wonderful. For performers, I should say. If you're a composer, it's always contemporary.
Right. Yes, exactly. Yes. So in your opinion, what is the importance of contemporary classical or new music in education for musicians of all ages and all levels, maybe?
I think that it offers us this chance to connect to our students. It's whether it be discussions on race, whether it be discussions on what listening, because there's so much music that's contemporary that is simple, especially when you get into minimalism and post-minimalism, that it gives you so much to think about. So it can help you when you're teaching, especially like younger kids or theory students. Choosing something that's a little bit more contemporary tends to resonate in their head a little bit better and strengthen their ears. But also because it is what's going on now, you know, it's so topical and the interest, I feel like, is just so important. And students tend to be more interested in what's going on now, especially if it includes representation.
Yeah. Yeah, I find sometimes I taught an intro to music class last semester, and some of the things I played for the students, I didn't think they would enjoy. Some more contemporary things that I thought, you know, maybe a little far out for, like, especially non-musicians. But I was surprised often, like, how, you know, they said, oh, that's really cool, or that slaps, or I really like that, or, you know, like, you never know. I think we don't give our audiences enough credit. Mm-hmm. And maybe we treat them as if they're not as literate musically as a lot of them are, right? And that by presenting a variety of works, you know, we don't want to get rid of traditional works, but by offering them these contemporary works, like you say, that they can connect to emotionally and that are more topical to some of the things we're experiencing in our world, you know, we can reach an audience in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that that's also another thing, that whether it's with more traditional classical music or contemporary classical music, I think an important change that has been happening lately is that people are talking about the music a little bit more, because the audience, like you said, we don't give our audience enough credit a lot of the time, I think. And really, they just want to be clued in on what's happening.
Right. Absolutely. So are there, if some of our listeners are out there listening and they're not as familiar with new music, are there some resources that they can look to learn a little bit more that you might recommend to them?
Yeah, there's this really great one called New Music USA that's got pretty much all the links you could possibly need. And also I Care If You Listen. Those are two great resources and they're very connected. And those places will give you news. They'll give you recordings, but also, you know, Google, working it contemporarily, you can just go to ye old Google and search contemporary classical musicians or composers, and you will find lots of websites, which is something that can only happen now.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is something, you know, this is something about new music and or contemporary classical music, if we want to call it that, as well. You know, I stress to students a lot that the world of classical music has changed so much, and finding one for one, what you're passionate about, and finding also something that's different than what other people are doing, and making your own kind of path is so important. And with so many brilliant composers out there, you know, I think there's an avenue for that, and really making your own path and making something that's true to who you are.
Mm-hmm. No, I completely agree. And you can be political with it if you want, or apolitical. You don't have to be political with it, but it is. I agree.
So are there particular composers you might recommend to our listeners, or are there any composers that you hope to collaborate with that you haven't collaborated with yet?
Oh, gosh. You know, one composer that I have been looking at their pieces a lot lately is Kamala Sankaram, who's also a fabulous singer. And so I'm planning my first recital. It won't be till next spring, but I'm still, you know, got to collect all
the stuff. Takes a while, yeah.
So I've been starting that, and I really want to... So I'll tell you a little bit about the theme. It's all female solo voice pieces with one performer, all composed by female vocalists. So I'm really trying to lean into this idea of empowerment, not just for women, but also being a vocalist is really scary when you're by yourself.
Yeah.
You know, just being there with a stand or without a stand, or with instruments even. But it's just a very, it's a scary place to be, but it's also super empowering when you can do it. And the recital I'm planning also will have a few instruments that I use around me. But Kamala Sankaram, I'd like to put one of her pieces on there. And also another composer that fell on my radar a little bit more in the past year is Pamela Z. So that's another composer that I would really love to work with. And also Meredith Monk is another composer. I would love to spend some time with her, and another person that's going to hopefully be on that recital.
Yeah. She has such an interesting history. She would be great to just like have dinner with and just pick her brain.
Yeah.
Her stories, stories about her career. Yeah.
Yeah. She's an interesting character. Definitely. If you're looking for someone to look into, to listen to, she's got a wide variety of vocal stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's great too. You know, I did my DMA document on opera and the Me Too movement, and some of my conclusions and some of my writing in the later chapters talked about how important it is that we continue to elevate female voices, whether they be librettists or composers or administrators or directors, kind of at all levels, right? So that the stories that we see on stage treat females more fairly, right? If you look at like Verdi operas, like if you're a leading lady in a Verdi opera, there's like a 75% chance that you'll die, right? Usually because of a man or at the hands of a man, right? And so having these female voices and these female perspectives is so important. And it's something that just didn't exist by and large for a really long period of our kind of musical history. Mm-hmm. But that's changing more and more rapidly all the time, it seems like. So,
you know, I kind of took a similar approach to a piece I was looking at recently. I was going to perform it, but then now I'm not performing it, but it's still one on my radar to do, and that's Poulenc's Le Voix Humaine.
Mm-hmm.
And the basic story of that is it's a one-act opera that's just a solo voice for the whole opera, and she's dealing with thoughts of suicide. And she's dealing with thoughts of suicide because of the person she's with. But at first I was thinking, I don't know if I like this story because I don't connect with it. And I don't like the idea of someone committing suicide because a man broke up with her.
Right.
But I was delving deeper into it, and I was thinking that there is such a great, there's a great conversation to be had on manipulation. And I think that even just the conversation, the fact that we can have these conversations about how we need to take a hold of our performing and change what the story is.
Right. Right. And you never know who's in your audience and what they are bringing with them, the experiences, the life experiences and the life situations that they're bringing in to the theater that night. Right. And what may be triggering for them or what may be kind of speak to them and their situation or inspire them in some way. Mm-hmm. So these perspectives are important. Yeah, that's wonderful. So you created iPlay with your partner, Christopher. Can you tell us a little more about what that is?
Yes, we created it while we were at South Carolina. So the basic concept is that it's an event where we teach, it's aimed towards kids, I should say, first of all. It's aimed towards families and children. And first we show them how anything can kind of be an instrument by making instruments out of things that can usually be found around the home or at least are easy to access. And then we have an open rehearsal that involves them where they actually are involved in the rehearsal. And then we do a concert of pieces that involves the audience. For most of them, we do try to keep at least one or two pieces on the program that are just professional musicians, because when you're going to be a professional musician and you want to show what that looks like, you want to make sure you still have a moment where the audience can take that in, even if you want the audience to be involved.
Yeah.
So through incorporating a bunch of different composers with different backgrounds, we're able to just introduce especially children and families to a variety of different types of people that they may or may not connect with. But whether or not they connect with them, hopefully it helps them understand them a little bit better.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, one of the folks that I interviewed for my DMA document said, you know, there are ways to show people different perspectives without preaching at them. Like, people don't want to come to like a performance and be preached at, maybe, but by kind of showing them, especially in creative ways, right? And through some of these new pieces, I think, different perspectives, then I think it makes us all better and more understanding of one another.
I think so too. And since music is so emotionally charged, you can often connect with people and kind of break down some preconceived notions just through performance, especially if it's involved, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So is there a way our listeners can learn more about iPlay or support iPlay, donate to iPlay?
Yeah. So one thing I didn't talk about is we won a Florida State funded grant to tour it in one of the counties of Northeast Florida. And we're trying to bring it to the school systems, but mainly working with the library branches right now. Mm-hmm. And it's a state funded grant. And there's also a portion that we have to raise funds for to match the grant. So we do have a GoFundMe to raise some money for that, as well as looking for any kind of sponsorship if anyone wanted to help out in other ways besides money. It doesn't always have to be that. It can be if anybody wants to help with advertising or if anyone knows good resources, we would love to have them. So I will make sure to give Craig the link to the GoFundMe, and hopefully it'd be great to get a few more donations that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, it's such important work. And the more we can expose young children to music, you know, in our schools, especially, you know, kind of coming out of COVID, sometimes the music programs are a little bit under stress right now. And so the more opportunities we can meet young people in the community who may not be getting the music that we hope that would get in a school setting, the better, I think. So this is really great.
Yeah, that's what our goals are.
Great. So I have lightning round questions. These are questions that I ask of all of my guests. Do you have a favorite singer? This usually ends up being like multiple people. Don't feel a pressure to choose one because everybody always chooses like two or three people. But do you have a favorite singer or singers?
Anything that's a favorite, it changes. You
know? I know.
It's more
I know.
Who is your favorite of the moment?
The moment, yes.
So one singer I have been looking into a lot, you know, I have a piece I want to put on my recital by, is Kathy Berberian. Mm-hmm. She's fantastic, and she's so fun to watch videos of. She's no longer with us, but she was born in the 20th century, so we do have some videos of her, and she's just fabulous. She is someone you can connect with, and you can tell she connected with her audiences, but she also is just a great singer.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have a favorite? I know you kind of didn't want to go the opera route. You love the new music route, but do you have a favorite like musical or opera that you can appreciate?
Yes, there is. You know, it kind of sounds like a cop-out answer, but my favorite opera is Magic Flute.
Yeah, no, that's not a cop-out answer at all. It's great opera.
Oh, it's so great. And, you know, I'm not like a super kid person. It almost seems like I am because I like doing things that involve children, but it's because they're the future. It's very, you know, selfish. I just want the kids to get the music training or the music interest at the very least for myself. But Magic Flute, not only is it such great music and everything, it's also so easy to teach with adults and children. It's easy for everyone to understand. And the English versions are also great. The Met's English version is phenomenal.
Yeah. Well, and there's so many levels to Magic Flute too, right? So no matter what age or what kind of appreciation level you're coming to it at, there's kind of something for everyone, I feel like.
It's true. Oh, and also about the Magic Flute is, not everybody knows opera, but almost everybody knows the Queen of the Night's aria. And so
that's true. It's one of those that I always talk about when I teach like the intro to music class, like here's opera that you probably have heard in your everyday life. And I love showing like TV commercials that have like famous like opera excerpts in them. And that's one that always like shows up in commercials. So if you could have, this is going to be an interesting one for you, I bet. If you could have dinner with three people dead or alive, who would they be?
Just people?
Yes.
Oh, gosh. You know, he was the start of my new music journey, so probably in most people's new music journey, so probably John Cage. He writes a lot. He'd either be really long-winded or really quiet. I don't know if he's like a talker or if just a huge writer, but he'd be really interesting just to hear what he really thought about a lot of the things he did.
And he did so much more, can we say, than 4 minutes and 33 seconds, which is what everybody always brings up when you mention John Cage. But, you know, having learned a lot about John Cage myself, and I know you have a deep appreciation for him, like there's so much more to him than that. So I encourage anybody listening that doesn't know much about John Cage to take a look at some of his other pieces.
Yeah, no, for sure. Another person that I think I would just be fascinated to hear talk would be Einstein.
Yeah.
I just think he, again, it's the writings. His writings are so interesting. And then a third person, gosh, it's hard to all of human history, the one conversation. I need to get some female representation in there is what I need. I don't know. It would be really interesting to talk to a woman of like an earlier time period to hear kind of what the rhetoric of women when men weren't around was. I don't know. That would be very eye-opening.
Yeah. That'd be an interesting conversation. Einstein, yeah. John Cage, and a woman from an earlier time in history. Yeah.
She can be unnamed or every woman, either one.
Every woman. The collective female voice from an earlier time in history. I like that.
Yeah.
So is there one book that has been informative for you in your life?
Oh, The Last Lecture. Have you heard of that book?
Mm-hmm.
That was one that was really important to me, and I read it in high school at like a really good time. And the life lessons that I take from it, you know, I'm a very focused and like driven type of personality. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when things don't go the right way, it just feels shattering. Even just the smallest things can feel absolutely shattering.
Yeah.
And that book, I think, was how I developed my perspective of when to let things go and how to try to enjoy things even when other things aren't going well.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I learned from that book.
That's great. That's a great lesson. That's hard to do. It's hard to do. That's a beautiful lesson. Good. So what's one piece of advice that current day Carrie Lee would have given to a younger version of yourself? And do you know what age you would go back to give this advice?
Oh my gosh. To me, it seems so obvious and like a bland answer, but practice piano.
Yeah, that's a good advice.
Don't stop playing piano. Get good at piano. And I stopped piano, like really playing piano and practicing probably around 9 or 10. I still took some lessons, but it wasn't like really informative lessons. So probably about that age, I'd tell myself, don't stop, keep going.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so interesting. Did you do a lot of playing by ear with piano as well, like you did with the flute?
Yeah, I mean, I still kind of do. It's more just piano for me is one of those things that I don't take seriously. It's just cathartic to sit at a piano and play something, and I'm not very good. But something that I can do is pick up on the chords of like a pop song or something that I like. So I still do that all the time. But as far as like really picking up music, maybe not as much.
Do you compose at all yourself?
I've been dabbling in it a little bit. Last semester, part of the degree here at BG is we have to take these classes in three different areas, cognition, culture, and digital media. Mm-hmm. And last semester we had digital media. And for my final project, I composed a piece using a video from a North Korean social activist where I took her video and I kind of tore it apart and manipulated it and inserted vocal lines to go with it. And that was a lot of fun. And I love doing things that are, again, kind of solo voice. It's really fun and it's empowering, but I never perform anything that I play around with because I just don't have that composer, what's the right word? I guess I'll say confidence. I was going to say cockiness, but I'll say confidence. They're so closely related.
Yeah, I think that's true. You have to, I mean, it's a lot to put something that's so personal out there. It's hard enough as a singer because our voice is such a part of us that it feels so personal, but I feel like if anything feels even more kind of exposing than that, it's probably composing, right? And really kind of putting yourself and your expression out there in that way.
Right.
At least as a singer, we're singing most of the time someone else's work.
Right.
So it doesn't feel quite as intimidating and personal.
Yeah. It's more like interpreting.
Yeah, that's great. So give us your 5-song must-have playlist, irrespective of genre. It can be popular song, contemporary classical, traditional kind of classical music, anything you want to throw at us.
Okay. I'm just going to make this one thing, even though it's a lot of things. The entire Philip Glass piano etudes is so gorgeous. And everything else is just going to be things I liked in high school. High school or college. I love the band Fun's first album. And if I had to pick one song on it, I'd probably say The Gambler. I love Panic at the Disco.
Great band.
If I had to pick one song, I would probably pick This Is Gospel. I love Bohemian Rhapsody.
a classic.
None of these are classical. Well, I did say Philip Glass etudes. But these are the things that I'll, like, sing along to, I guess, in the car. Again, I love the cathartic experience. What else would I pick for my five-time ultimate? It would have to be a soundtrack. You know what? I love the sound. I think it was Catch Me If You Can.
Oh, yeah.
That's a great soundtrack.
That is a great soundtrack. Yeah. Wonderful. Well, Carrie, where can people find out more about you?
You can find me on Facebook. I have my own Facebook, but I live more through my duo's Facebook. Our duo is called De Saison, French, D-E-U-X-S-A-I-S-O-N-S, duo, D-U-O. And you can find me on my website at carrieleesoprano.com. And I keep it pretty updated. I have a piece on there of me and one of my colleagues here at BG doing a piece for solo voice and saxophone.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, I hope everybody will go check that out. That's great. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing your perspectives and teaching us more about new music and why it's so important to what we do and kind of all of helping all of us find our own voices during this time, especially this time of like such kind of transition and unrest maybe in our world, how these voices are so important for all of us. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you, Craig. I'm so happy to be here.
Thank you for listening to the Find Your Best Voice podcast. Make sure to rate and subscribe to the podcast. And for more information, be sure to follow at Best Voice Pod on Instagram or visit our website, bestvoicepod.com. See you next time.